This is FMT Magazine, issue number 50 for summer 2020. The editor-in-chief is DKS. The editor is Donna Hardy, with the editorial panel consisting of Michelle Warville, Dr. Rick Berman, Dr. James Campbell, Guy Roberts, Sean Butler, Dean Simmons, Barry Hughes, and Julian Perry, the culture editor. It's published by Sunday at 207 Union Street, London, SE10LN. On the web at wearesunday, all one word, .com. That's for the United Grand Lodge of England, Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. The editorial manager is Sean Butler. You can email him editor@freemasonrytoday.com. Freemasonry Today's address is Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. For Masonic inquiries, you can email editor@freemasonrytoday.com or on the web at www.ugle.org.uk. And just a note here, this is copyright, the United Grand Lodge of England 2020, and the opinions herein are those of the authors or persons interviewed only and do not reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England or Sunday. Right, let's have a look at the contents page to see what's coming up. And in a moment, we start with the welcome, which is from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E. It's Dr. David Staples. He welcomes you to the summer issue. And then in the out and about section, we have 8 pages of Uniting Against COVID-19. That's news from the provinces and districts. In the stories section, there is Grand Organ, Grand Temple. The revived Willis Organ in Freemasons Hall is sounding better than ever. Bonds and Brotherhood, members of the Armed Forces Lodges find camaraderie in Freemasonry. On the Road, with UGLE's digital workshops, give provinces and districts a communications edge. The interview this time is with Charles Hopkinson Woolley, the Grand Director of Ceremonies, on preparing for the role. And this time's 60 Seconds With is the Provincial Grand Master and Grand Superintendent for Surrey, Ian Chandler. Next in the Daily Advancement section, there are Familiar Faces, exhibition features famous Freemasons. Special Stories, Masonic Archives reveal a poignant record of a steward on the Titanic. And on the side, Red Cross of Constantine, this perhaps lesser known order has a long and distinguished history. In the Grand Lodge section, Looking to the Skies, Phases by Lumen brings together art and astronomy at the Museum of Freemasonry, and Quarterly Communication, Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes on dedication, flexibility and patience during testing times. But let's start off with the welcome from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe, Dr. David Staples.
Since we made the decision to close Freemasons Hall, I am writing this column from my home in North Cambridgeshire, where I now spend my days staring at screens full of pixelated faces and cursing the peculiar joys of rural internet connections. The work of UGLE is still ticking along, albeit with the help of new technology and a large dose of patience, and we are all having to adapt to changes, whether it be a different working location, a requirement to quarantine, or the pain of being unable to interact with friends and family in the way that we might wish to. I also know, having spoken to many patients over the last few weeks, that many of you will experience real hardship and concrete changes in your personal circumstances as a result of the policy of trying to keep as many people safe as possible. Do not be too proud to admit you need help. And let us all remember our obligation to help those less fortunate than ourselves. These are most certainly difficult and testing times for us all, and each of us will be dealing with the crisis in a different way. One thing that is certain is Freemasonry and its members are banding and bonding together in new ways to help one another and the communities in which they live. Supporting this work is enormously important to UGLE, as well as for the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the Freemasons Charity. At the time of writing, I have just chaired the first meeting of our joint COVID-19 response group, made up of the lead provincial Grand Masters from each area of the country and the MCF. Supported with more than £1 million of funding, it is examining those projects started locally by you that are effective, high impact, and worth rolling out as national initiatives. In addition to my job at UGLE, I have also been working as a consultant physician at Peterborough City Hospital. And as a now part-time medic, I want to echo my thanks for the fantastic job that those working in truly testing environments manage day in and day out. It is not easy in these difficult times, and the broadening of our 9 o'clock toast, hashtag time to toast, on social media to include and honour all those working to keep our country going is well deserved and has been well received. The virus has touched me personally with the loss of a great friend and fellow doctor. It is a sad reality that I will not be alone in losing someone I care for. We will lose those we have shared ritual, meals, and great fun with, those we have volunteered with, those we have known for years, and in some cases, those we have only recently met. As we come through our own time of challenge and trial, it is even more important to remember the core values of Freemasonry that support us all: friendship, charity, integrity, and respect. Be sure to hold them close in your hearts as we remember better times. While coronavirus is going to be with us for some considerable time, we need to ensure that we do not lose touch with our fellow members or our Freemasonry, and I have been enormously encouraged by the ways we have found to maintain our connection with each other. Members of my Mother Lodge have organised virtual quiz nights, communal meals, birthday parties, and all sorts of other inventive practices to pass the time in lockdown. I have been following the enormous growth in the use of Solomon and know that the team are heartened that the efforts they have gone to in order to facilitate your daily advancement are being so well received. Out of darkness comes light, and I have no doubt that each and every member will find comfort by living our values, by looking after one another and our communities, and by finding new ways to remain engaged. Freemasons have always embraced the spirit of selflessness, of giving, of helping, and we will not only continue to do so in these difficult times, but will be even more present, even more caring, even more giving. We will continue to practice that most fundamental building block of Freemasonry, being there to do the right thing. We all look forward to things returning to normal, but I fear we have a few more months yet to endure, and although we know not how long this period of uncertainty may last, each day passing brings us closer to its end. I share with you a quote from the front of the Oxford Handbook of Clinical Medicine, once found in the pockets of every junior doctor in the land, and affectionately known as the cheese and onion in honour of its yellow and green cover. Come what come may, time and the hour runs through the roughest day. Macbeth. I wish you and all those you know health, happiness, and good fortune. Dr. David Staples, Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E.
Page 6 begins the out and about section, how Freemasons are responding to the coronavirus. Starting with an article in just a moment, UGLE forms emergency COVID-19 response group, and then followed by reports from around the provinces and regions. So this first article. In response to COVID-19, UGLE has set up an emergency structure consisting of a lead provincial Grand Master for each of the regional communication groups, the RCGs, in addition to the Grand Secretary and the Chief Executive of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the MCF, they form the UGLE COVID-19 Response Group. The group aims to foster closer operational working within and between the RCGs to deliver visible and effective help on a national scale to our members and their dependents in need, as well as to members of the wider community. The COVID-19 response group will focus on identifying and recommending a wide variety of provincial projects that could be developed further or replicated. The group is currently investigating initiatives to feed the homeless. The manufacture of personal protective equipment, PPE, through local contacts, the purchase of essential patient monitoring equipment for the NHS Nightingale hospitals, and the creation of Meals on Wheels services from Masonic halls with professional kitchens. UGLE is working alongside the MCF, the Freemasons charity, which has provided an initial £1 million to support strategically important, high-impact, grassroots projects throughout Freemasonry. The fund will be evenly split to provide each RCG with £100,000 to allocate to such projects. A National Freemasons COVID-19 Community Fund has also been launched, and the MCF will match donations to this relief chest up to £1 million. Members can support the fund with charity collections through virtual pub quizzes or lodges of instruction. For more information and a donation guide that explains how to make payments, you can visit mcf.org.uk/COVID-19 fund, and that's spelled COVID-19 fund. The funds raised will be allocated by the COVID-19 response group to support charities that are responding to the current crisis. Dr. David Staples, CEO at UGLE, said, "I'm sure you'll appreciate that these are extraordinary times, and that such times call for extraordinary measures if we're to remain relevant, effective, and also to be seen to be so by our membership and the world at large. At this time of national crisis, we see the potential to impact significantly and positively within our communities by doing those things that Freemasons have always done, but by doing them proudly and visibly. In order to maximise this potential and ensure that what we do is effective, it'll be necessary to coordinate activity throughout the whole of the craft in a way that has never been done before." David Innes, Chief Executive of the MCF, added, "During these challenging times, I am delighted that the MCF has been able to set aside £2 million to support the two initiatives outlined above, as well as continuing to support members and their families. All of us will be acutely aware of the extraordinary efforts of local charities and other community initiatives that are delivering vital work across the country in response to the coronavirus. I encourage all provinces to identify and recommend via their respective RCG local charities and projects that are making a real difference to people's lives that would benefit from financial assistance from the MCF so that we can help them expand or continue their support." Now we come to 22 short reports from around the provinces.
Number 1. RMBI. In times of need. The government is currently supplying 58,000 separate organisations with PPE, which has led to logistical issues due to sheer demand. While the NHS has been prioritised, care homes are also struggling to source PPE. UGLE has 18 care homes and 1,000 residents through its Royal Masonic Benevolent Institution, RMBI. And Freemasons are stepping forward to safeguard vulnerable loved ones and the carers who help protect and care for them. In just 2 days, Scunthorpe Freemasons made 1,000 full-face visors to protect carers working in RMBI care homes. Mark Hooton, the owner of Cymark Engineering, which normally makes components for the rail sector and the motorbike industry, adapted the equipment on site to make aluminium frames for the protective visors. He was then supported in sourcing raw materials, establishing logistics channels, and setting up a production line to make hundreds of visors every day for RMBI. Mark is now supplying 600 visors for the Carers Trust, which had been unable to secure them due to the national shortage. Freemason Sean Fitzgerald from Valence Lodge No. 5388, which meets in Upminster, donated 500 packs of antiseptic wipes to the Carers Trust and 500 visors to NHS Moorfields Eye Hospital. In Wales, Freemasons from Aberpenna Lodge No. 6354, Aberdare, donated 100 safety visors to surgeries in the North Kennan Valley. And North Wales Freemasons donated £2,250 to help produce face visors after Joseph Meerman of St. David's Lodge set up a 3D printer system to make the equipment for local hospitals.
Number 2. Cheshire. Comfort in crisis. Cheshire Freemasons have come together to help Stockport Social Services and Police with donations of gifts for children who are being supported by social care during the coronavirus crisis. Social services workers were looking for donations of good quality items for children currently under child protection or child in need plans. To provide some comfort to the smaller and younger children, the Freemasons donated a large selection of teddy bears. These were presented, in accordance with social distancing rules, at Greater Manchester's Police's Divisional Headquarters in Stockport. Liz Wright, Cheshire Freemasons office manager, was on hand to deliver the bears to PC Andy Bennett and DS Matt Tarr. For older children, Cheshire Freemason Harry Wright organised for a donation to be made on behalf of the Cheshire Freemasons charity. This covered the costs for more age-specific items such as makeup, footballs and Netflix vouchers.
Number 3. Suffolk. Doorstep delivery. Suffolk Freemasons have been organising schemes to support the most vulnerable in their communities. In the town of Sudbury, lodges are offering a Square Meals service. Food boxes are ordered, loaded, and delivered to customers' doorsteps for £33 each. They contain a selection of staples, such as bread, pasta, chicken, tea bags, vegetables, milk, coffee, and eggs. The service is open to those who are unable to leave their homes and are stuck for help during this difficult time. Each box is loaded by Suffolk's team and passed to one of their delivery drivers. Produce is sourced locally to help businesses in the community. Should recipients of the service wish to make a small contribution in addition to the purchase of the box, the donation will be given to Sudbury's Storehouse Food Bank to help those who can't afford even the basics.
Number 4. Berkshire. Serve and protect. Berkshire Freemasons have answered the call for face masks from local care homes and other facilities. More than 200 face masks were delivered in early April to Berkshire care homes, hospitals and prisons, with a further 300 planned. When the PPE crisis made headlines, Graham Wignall from the Berkshire branch of the Widow's Sons Masonic Bikers Association joined a small group that was making face masks with 3D printers. The objective was to manufacture 100,000 for the NHS's PPE stockpile. Initially, Graham's printer was too small to meet the requirements of the group, and after finding a design that worked, he found it difficult to produce face masks in sufficient volumes. Joining together with other members of the Widow's Sons in Berkshire, Graham set up a production line to print the components, gather all the other needed materials, and assemble the face masks. Following the first delivery of 200, production was streamlined, and they planned to deliver more.
Number 5. West Kent. A cut above. The province of West Kent's West Kent Emergency Fund has provided £1,000 to Mark Addy of Design Etch Cut, who is making full-face acrylic masks on a laser cutter in a warehouse in Northfleet. The money will enable the purchase of supplies so that these masks can be donated to local hospitals, hospices, maternity units and care homes, as well as hospitals as far afield as Exeter and Cambridge. Tom Weaver, who owns the premises, is supplying the space and electricity free of charge. The 200-plus masks made each day are being delivered to the front lines by a team of motorcycle volunteers. The masks are made to an improved design created by the University of Bath and are constructed from a fully sterilisable acrylic.
Now, number 6, Lincolnshire, saying thank you. Lincolnshire Freemasons are selling specially designed mugs to support the NHS. As well as being a fundraiser, the mugs are a thank you to staff fighting the coronavirus. All profits will go to the NHS. Tony O'Brien of Louth-based Lindsay Lodge No. 712, whose members are leading the project, said, "We've had a great response to the mugs. We'll keep on producing more until the demand dries up." One of the first to get a mug was Skegness nurse Willow Puddy Buxton. The mugs, which say Thank You NHS, are available in bulk supplies of 36 for £200, including delivery to anywhere in Lincolnshire. They can be ordered in smaller numbers online for £5 plus postage and packing from Lynx Signs, that's Lynx, L-I-N-C-S, for Lincolnshire, which is run by Peter Thomas. Please contact Tony by emailing Tony O'Brien 72, that's T-O-N-Y-O-B-R-I-E-N 72, at yahoo.com to order bulk supplies.
Number 7. Derbyshire. Caring Catering. The lockdown has made it difficult for many people to keep their household stocked with essential supplies, and catering staff who rely on events at Derbyshire meeting halls are worried for their income. Steve Jones of Chesterfield and Malcolm Prentice of Burton-upon-Trent have helped to ease the needs of both with a Square Meals delivery service, using the catering facilities at their respective Masonic halls to provide the best fresh chilled food to isolated individuals and families in need. Deliveries are being made by a team of 30 volunteer Freemasons. The catering staff, who are not Freemasons, share the organisation's values and are working tirelessly to prepare food for those in need. With the kitchens producing high-quality meals at very affordable prices, £6 to £7 for two courses, the initiative has proved a great success and has been well received, with more than 800 meals delivered. The halls are planning to extend the service to the wider community and adjoining provinces if required.
Number 8. East Lancashire. Tameside A&E nurse and East Lancashire Freemason John Gilmore has bought an ambulance to help COVID-19 patients isolate safely. John, who is a member of King Edward VII Lodge, number 3329, noticed that the overstretched ambulance service couldn't return patients home and taxi services are reluctant to transport those who have been positively diagnosed. Local tradespeople and members of the community have donated money as well as services to cover repairs and running costs. It's hoped the ambulance will soon be providing a vital service to those in need.
Number 9. East Kent. Relief work. East Kent Provincial Grand Master Neil Johnston is releasing £57,000 from the province's Disaster Relief Fund as part of the Cornwallis East Kent Freemasons charity. The money will help food banks, local charities and other local causes in East Kent. Neil said, COVID-19 is unprecedented in our lifetime and is certainly affecting many of our local communities in East Kent in many different ways. This money will enable us to help bring some relief to the most in need during these most challenging times.
Number 10, Sussex. Help for Heroes. Sussex Freemasons, through the Sussex Masonic Charity Foundation, have given £30,000 to support NHS staff working in major hospitals across the county. St Richard's in Chichester, Worthing Hospital, Royal Sussex County Hospital in Brighton, Princess Royal Hospital in Haywards Heath, Eastbourne District General Hospital and Conquest Hospital in Hastings will each receive £5,000 to help improve the working experience of the frontline staff battling the pandemic. Michael Harris, chair of the Sussex Masonic Charity Foundation, said, "At this time of need, it's so important that we all do what we can to help keep up the morale of frontline NHS staff. Sussex Freemasons fully support our incredible NHS, and we are delighted that we can play a small role in helping them."
Number 11. Northumberland. Cracking cause. Northumberland Freemason Tom Stewart single-handedly delivered hundreds of chocolate eggs to deserving causes throughout the Northeast at Easter. Normally, at Easter, the Northumbria chapter of the Widow's Sons Masonic Bikers Association would ride to a number of special schools, food banks, care homes, veterans charities and youth centres across North Tyneside, Newcastle, Northumberland and County Durham, delivering more than 1,000 Easter eggs. The eggs are donated by supermarkets, businesses and Freemasons and lodges from the province of Northumberland. This year, however, given the coronavirus, alternative ways of delivery had to be explored so the community didn't miss out. Tom, Widow's Son's secretary, took it upon himself to personally deliver each and every egg. He said, "It was difficult, as I had to ensure everyone was safe and that I followed government instructions on social distancing. It was a case of ringing up in advance, arranging a safe place to put the eggs, and then leaving without any contact. I'm really grateful for the help we were given by so many businesses, but particular thanks must go to Morrison's and Tesco, which went the extra mile. It was nice to do something positive during the crisis." The Widow's Sons is open to all Freemasons who enjoy the sport of motorcycling. Throughout the year, they help to raise awareness of the work of the organisation, as well as raising much-needed funds for charity.
Number 12, Wiltshire. After a successful trial, Corsham Lodge, number 6616 in Wiltshire, has offered to expand its food delivery initiative to other lodges in the area and the Wiltshire Masonic Widows Association. Local Freemasons John Dean and Tom Snell have been putting food packs together at Pickwick Masonic Hall and distributing them to lodge members who don't feel able to leave their homes due to the coronavirus outbreak. John said the Almoner, charity steward and secretary, contacted all their members to see if they're safe and whether they need help. Although many have a network of family or friends supporting them, there are members who are on their own and who do not want to leave their homes. So the food pack idea was born.
Number 13. Devonshire. Dinner service. Benevolent Lodge, number 303, in Tynmouth, Devonshire, is helping to cook Sunday lunches for members of the community during the coronavirus crisis. Councillor David Matthews' 16-year-old son, Bailey, came up with the idea after he decided to cook a meal for his self-isolating grandmother, leaving it on her doorstep so as to keep a safe distance. He then asked David if he could spend part of his own savings to buy enough food to make meals for more people in the community. David, who is chairman of the Tynmouth Finance and General Purposes Committee and a past mayor of Tynmouth, thought it was such a good idea that he decided to try to develop it further. He worked alongside his son to cook Sunday dinners for 56 people in the first week. They have been assisted by Karen Riding, who volunteered to pack the meals in heatproof bags, sanitize them, and distribute them to delivery drivers. After an anonymous donor gave them £2,000, they increased the number of dinners to 106 and expanded the delivery area. On Easter Sunday, the number rose to 176 meals, which were sent out to people as far away as Exminster, West Ogwell and Ilsington. Upon hearing of David and Bailey's work, the Provincial Grand Master of Devonshire, Ian Kingsbury, sent a cheque for £500. This will be accompanied by another cheque from Devonshire Mark Master Masons Provincial Grand Master, Peter Balsam.
Number 14. Leicestershire and Rutland. Printing PPE. Freemason Chris Parsons of Rutland Lodge No. 1130 in Melton Mowbray has turned his hobby into a life-saving effort to protect the frontline heroes of the NHS. After talking to a friend who works as a ward nurse at Glenfield Hospital in Leicester, Chris began to put his 3D printing skills to work to help ease the shortage of PPE. Initially, Chris began by sourcing a design from the internet to help nurses who were suffering from sore ears as a result of wearing face masks all day. After a few trials and prototypes, a model was ready for use with an initial delivery of 50 pieces to the ward staff. Chris then began making equipment for those who work with COVID-19 patients. Using a similar material and method, Chris turned to the production of face masks. Once the prototype has been accepted, he'll begin a concerted effort to supply enough to Glenfield Hospital to suit demand. So far, these efforts have been fully self-funded, and Chris will produce as much as he can in these troubling times.
Number 15. Lincolnshire. Helping Hands. Matthew Felgate, a Lincolnshire Freemason and owner of Lincoln Distillery, saw demand for his company's gin evaporate almost overnight as the coronavirus crisis hit. So he switched to producing hand sanitizer. We had 50 litres of high-strength alcohol we couldn't use, so it seemed natural to turn it into hand sanitizer and give it away, he said. Matthew has made 150 litres of disinfectant based on advice from a local university and a formulation recommended by the World Health Organization. Supported by other companies and friends, he was quickly able to source packaging and labels for the sanitizer, enabling him to get the product out quickly. Reaching out through social media, Matthew and Lincoln Distillery have been able to give supplies to the county's ambulance, fire, police and air ambulance services, as well as other frontline organisations locally and nationally.
Next, number 16, North Wales. North Wales Freemasons have donated £5,000 to the North Wales NHS charity to buy 50 PC tablets. The charity supports all North Wales NHS healthcare services and staff within Betsy Cadwaladr University Health Board. When they learned that visitors were no longer allowed to visit hospitals across North Wales, Freemasons were determined to help frontline staff enhance patient care, and the tablets are set to provide huge comfort to patients and their families. This generous donation will help enable patients to communicate face-to-face with their loved ones, says Nia Williams, support manager at the charity.
Number 17. Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire. Pillars of Strength. The work of the Three Pillars, Feeding the Homeless Trust, founded by Freemasons Mick Pescud and Jed Dempsey, has not stopped, despite the inevitable suspension of their weekly feeding services in Peterborough and St. Neots due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The charity has continued to support most of their street friends by working alongside Peterborough City Council, following its decision to house rough sleepers in local hotels. In particular, the Trust has been working with the Council's outreach team, the Peterborough Soup Kitchen and the city's homeless hub, to provide daily support to 90 street friends housed in a hotel. This has since been expanded to another 4 friends housed in Peterborough guest houses by Fenland District Council and more than 20 friends housed elsewhere in the Peterborough area by Cambridgeshire County Council. The Trust plays its part by sourcing items for breakfast and brunch goodie bags. The bags are packed by the soup kitchen and distributed to the various locations. In addition to the goodie bags, the homeless hub prepares hot food for evening meals.
Number 18, Worcestershire. 55 members of the Cubit Club in Worcestershire have volunteered to provide services for those who are self-isolating. Freemason John Hayes from the Lodge of Hospitality No. 8325 is one such volunteer, delivering essential groceries to Shirley Williams, the widow of a founding member and past master of the Lodge of Dewey Sant, No. 9135. Club is a provincial Grand Lodge of Worcestershire initiative to provide young and new Freemasons with a medium to socialise and liaise with fellow members of a similar age or Masonic experience.
Number 19. Metropolitan. On the front line. Freemason Carl Fazakerly has joined the fight against coronavirus through his voluntary job with St. John Ambulance. Carl has been a member of the Lodge of Loyalty, No. 1607, since December 2018. When the academy where he works closed due to COVID-19, Carl dedicated himself to working on the front lines with the ambulance service. As the pressure on the NHS has increased significantly since the outbreak, St. John Ambulance crews, with the updated fleet supplied by Mark Master Masons across the country, have been assisting in the emergency transport of patients. Carl has been undertaking the role of an emergency response blue light driver since the 23rd of March, pitching in to do his part without a second thought to make a difference and save lives.
Number 20, East Lancashire. The Extra Mile. Rochdale District Freemasons in the province of East Lancashire are supporting district charity steward John Taylor's initiative to provide items for the local food bank during the coronavirus crisis. Initially, brethren were encouraged to donate food or financial support, and John, working with the food bank, would buy the items needed most. Each item was given a value with an overall target of reaching 1 mile, hence the slogan, Miles More Food from the Freemasons. Since the public health crisis took hold, Rochdale Freemasons have increased their efforts. A dedicated bank account has been set up, and in the absence of regular meetings, brethren are encouraged to make financial donations. Generous support from lodges and individuals has been received. Royd's Lodge number 816 donated £780, and 410 Easter eggs were donated from Hopwood Hall College. John and his wife, Sue, make twice-weekly trips to Asda, buy what's needed and take everything to the food bank. The running total to date is equivalent to a third of a mile. A further £2,500 is needed to reach the target.
Number 21. Norfolk. First Defence. A Norwich man working to make face shields to protect frontline and key workers has received a helping hand from Freemasons. Colin Breckens, 34, has been using 3D printers to make grabbers that can be used to push buttons and open doors, as well as PPE. Colin plans to keep making masks as long as he can source and fund materials, and has set up a crowdfunding page to raise £3,000 to buy filaments for shield frames and supports, elastic and acetate panels for visors, and sterile wipes. The father of six has received support online and in the community, receiving a £300 check from Naval and Military Lodge number 3678 in Norfolk. Any additional funds will cover the cost of purchasing more 3D printers to increase the number of visors that can be produced.
And the last one, number 22, Essex. Essex Freemasons are helping to fund a £100,000 research project to provide up to 2,000 COVID-19 antibody tests a day across eastern England. The money will be used to buy an advanced machine that will accept blood samples from NHS hospitals in the region to verify whether people have had the COVID-19 virus. Those showing antibodies will be followed over the long term to see if the antibodies confer immunity that would allow them to return to work. The Dynex machine will be used by scientists led by Professor Bill Fraser of the Norwich Medical School at the University of East Anglia. It is expected to come online in July. Until then, a second-hand unit is being put into place to ensure that testing can start as soon as possible. Rodney Bass, Provincial Grand Master for Essex, said, "Essex Freemasons have joined with colleagues in Norfolk, Suffolk and Hertfordshire to ensure that the University of East Anglia receives the funds it needs to increase testing levels. Until now, the university has only been able to handle a few hundred antibody tests each day. This new high-throughput machine will significantly increase that to 2,000 daily, which could make a huge difference to our hard-pressed NHS and care home workers." The COVID-19 response group structure is given in a table, which takes up the rest of this page, page 11. The structure consists of a lead PGM for each regional communications group, the RCGs. And there are nine of them, plus another one for the Metropolitan Grand Lodge itself in London. So the table tells us that RCG1 consists of the provinces of Cumberland and Westmorland, Durham, Yorkshire North and East Ridings, Yorkshire West Riding and Northumberland, and it's led by John Arthur from Durham. RCG2 is East Lancashire, West Lancashire, Isle of Man, Cheshire and North Wales, led by Sir David Trippier of East Lancashire. RCG3 is Shropshire, Staffordshire, Worcestershire and Warwickshire, led by Robert Vaughan from Worcestershire. RCG4 is Gloucestershire, Herefordshire, Monmouthshire, South Wales, West Wales and Bristol, led by Gareth Jones of South Wales. RCG5 is Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Middlesex and Oxfordshire, led by John Clark of Buckinghamshire. RCG6 is Bedfordshire, Derbyshire, Leicestershire and Rutland, Lincolnshire, Nottinghamshire, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire, led by Dave Wheeler of Lincolnshire. RCG7 is Cambridgeshire, Essex, Hertfordshire, Norfolk and Suffolk, led by Steve Allen of Norfolk. RCG8 is East Kent, West Kent, Surrey and Sussex, led by Ian Chandler of Surrey. RCG9 is Devonshire, Cornwall, Somerset, Hampshire and Isle of Wight, Wiltshire, Dorset, Guernsey and Alderney and Jersey, led by David Medlock of Somerset. The next part of the Out and About section is UGLE's districts are pulling together. From around the world, Freemasons are supporting their fellow members and their communities. Now we're going to go quickly in very short one or two paragraph articles around some of the UGLE districts around the globe, starting with Cyprus.
We have donated 25,000 euros, £22,000, to help a government hospital purchase equipment for its ICU. Lodge almoners and individual brethren are looking out for members or organisations that require assistance. They have been asked during Zoom meetings to report back to the district office should support be needed, and we've put aside resources to provide help. Several lodges have organised the delivery of free food parcels in their area.
Gibraltar. The district launched an appeal to raise funds for the Gibraltar Health Authority, raising £26,400 within 24 hours. Inhabitants Lodge No. 153 donated £500 to the care agency to provide meals for elderly citizens and raised over £1,200 for brain tumour research. St John's Lodge No. 115 set up a network to assist Freemasons and other members of the community who required support.
Bengal. Our district has created a COVID-19 relief fund, and members' donations helped local police to distribute food, soaps and masks to people in need.
Now, Bombay. The district contributed 500,000 Indian rupees, about £5,000, to the Police Welfare Fund in support of the police officers working on the front lines during the crisis. A further 500,000 rupees, or £5,000, is earmarked for other frontline workers to be distributed when lodges in the district appeal for it.
Madras. As a result of the government lockdown, hundreds of thousands of migrant workers remained stranded throughout India, and local government authorities have moved them into shelters. We are operating our kitchen at Freemasons Hall in Chennai, and are preparing and distributing about 1,500 food packets every day. We have also given 400 sets of PPE to the police and are providing bedsheets and toiletries to those in the shelters.
Hong Kong and the Far East now. The measures implemented in response to the virus in Hong Kong have been much softer than in other countries. Many local brethren are assisting local charities through their membership of various churches and social clubs.
Northern India. Our district is currently exploring initiatives to help local communities. Some brethren are involved in an individual capacity in various charity initiatives relating to the coronavirus response, such as the distribution of food, masks and gloves.
Sri Lanka. We have supported a government initiative to supply food to people in need and are looking at helping to purchase an ultrasound scanner for the COVID-19 unit of the third largest teaching hospital in the country.
East Africa. The district grand charity has allocated 2 million Kenyan shillings, that's £16,000, to provide food and other items to those in need, and individual lodges and chapters are also involved. Individual lodge members are also giving generously in their communities. Uganda, Tanzania, and the Seychelles are undertaking similar initiatives to those taken in Kenya.
Ghana. In April, the district Grand Master launched an appeal to raise about £15,000 sterling to support Ghana's main frontline research institute, the Noguchi Memorial Institute for Medical Research, in the fight against COVID-19. At the time of writing, the target has been exceeded twofold, with Freemasons raising over the equivalent of over £30,000. And next we go to KwaZulu-Natal.
Several lodges and brethren of the widow's sons have donated food hampers to those in need and medication to the elderly.
And in Nigeria, the district has asked for voluntary donations from brethren with the view to assist federal and state governments in their fight against COVID-19.
Orange Free State. Brethren have been providing their domestic employees and gardeners with full remuneration, and most were given extra provisions before they left due to the lockdown. Many brethren have been in contact with their workers and provided additional support. star of Bethlehem Lodge number 2522, has regularly provided support to people in need and the local animal shelter. We are ready to assist any brethren who require support.
Now, Sierra Leone and the Gambia, the district has identified vulnerable communities, brethren and widows who could be beneficiaries of a fundraising drive presently being undertaken.
South Africa, North. Individual lodges or groups of lodges are providing food parcels to communities, setting up soup kitchens and providing cooked meals. They are also collecting food from manufacturers and distributing it, and are providing PPE to retirement centres, orphanages and care centres.
Now, South Africa, Western Division. A number of lodges are supporting the less fortunate with food parcels. We're continuing to support organisations in our local communities, including those that aid children with disabilities.
Zambia. Masonic Charity Fund South has assembled a special committee to work with the Ministry of Health on community-based projects, such as sanitising markets and bus stops. The plan is to fund the cost of chemicals and maintenance costs for the personnel engaged in the exercise. Consideration is also being given to PPE donations to the Ministry of Health.
And in Zimbabwe and Malawi, we are dedicating activities to keep those in our Masonic homes safe and fed. While in the Bahamas and Turks, worshipful masters have been asked to check in on older brethren and widows. These individuals may live alone or have underlying health conditions and are therefore afraid to go out for groceries and medication. Worshipful masters have also quietly and discreetly contracted brethren who may have been laid off from their jobs and are now in financial distress to determine how lodges can assist or whether to refer the matter to the district's Board of Benevolence. We have designed a district face mask and hope to have the initial batch of these ready shortly.
Bermuda. Our local community is being well served by our government. However, certain brethren, particularly those on limited incomes or who are self-employed, were financially stricken. Our concern is that those who may be in difficulty may be unwilling to step forward, so we are looking to set up an anonymous hotline. This is a work in progress, and we are still in virtual discussion.
South America, Northern Division. We've created a group of almoners and charity stewards to coordinate support for brethren and their families. We also created the Monday check. Every Monday, lodge almoners check if members are well or need assistance. Five members of the district contracted the disease, and we sadly lost worshipful brother John Smallwood on the 15th of April in the UK. Two members have recovered and two remain hospitalised. We also created a group of doctors from the district who are helping to coordinate activities and ensure the efficiency of support. We've been working in cooperation with the British Commonwealth Society in Rio de Janeiro on humanitarian aid.
South America, Southern Division. We have collected and transferred funds to a school in Chaco Province. Although there is no schooling at the moment due to COVID-19, the only meal these children get each day is thanks to our contribution. We are continuing to support the British and Argentine Benevolent Society and APAER, which provide support to rural schools, and are assisting other small groups making face masks.
Montreal and Halifax. All three craft lodges have communicated with their members to remind them that should any member be in need of assistance, to contact his lodge secretary. We have at least one lodge member who has made a significant donation to the Montreal General Hospital COVID-19 Relief Fund, as well as the supplying of 500 N95 masks to the Canadian Shriners Hospital for Children in Montreal.
North Island, New Zealand. Before the shutdown, our Masonic Centre at Ellerslie was used by the New Zealand Blood Service, which is run by one of our brethren. They then asked if we could reopen the centre for them to gather more blood donations. This would have been the first time many have seen inside the centre. As there were few people on the roads, an area-wide advertising campaign was launched via electronic billboards, led by a member who works for the billboard company. Various members of our district are also working as first responders, including police, ambulance, and nursing.
And last in this section, South Island, New Zealand. All members of our district have been asked to keep in contact with vulnerable neighbours as well as their fellow brethren. The disproportionate number of older members and the requirement for all of us to remain in our bubble precludes community work for most of us. The last article in the entire Out and About section under the news subheading is entitled Letchworths Makes Its Move, offering more lines of regalia and gift items that draw on the rich history of Freemasonry. The revamped shop will find a new home in Freemasons Hall.
Plans are underway to move Letchworths, the Masonic shop in Freemasons Hall in London. Larger, smarter and better located than its predecessor, the new space opposite the Museum of Freemasonry will allow Freemasons to obtain an increased range of regalia in a more enjoyable environment. The store will also stock a brand new range of gifts related to Freemasonry, Freemasons Hall and the Museum of Freemasonry. It's hoped it will open in July, coronavirus allowing. For Perry Bushell, head of trading at Freemasons Hall, opening the new Letchworths boils down to one simple desire. We want to have a shop that's worthy of Freemasons Hall. The plan is for us to grow our customer base by selling gifts and providing the best quality regalia that's available to Freemasons anywhere in the world. The old shop had done a great job, but it was looking its age, Bushell continues. Non-Freemasons felt they weren't allowed to go in there. Freemasons themselves told us they wanted buying regalia to be a meaningful experience, and that wasn't the case in the old shop. It was too cramped. Acquiring regalia will now feel special, as we'll be in this beautiful listed interior with all the old portraits on the wall. We want people to be excited they are getting regalia from UGLE headquarters. Whereas the old Letchworths had display space for 18 different lines of regalia, the new 1,200 square foot shop will have room for 24 lines, meaning new ranks can be included. Ladies' regalia will also be stocked for the first time, alongside a wider range of suits, shoes, briefcases, jewels, jackets, and waistcoats. This space is being created in collaboration with Lumsden Design, which has worked on shops for the British Museum and the Museum of Modern Art in New York, as well as the Harry Potter shops for Warner Brothers. Bushell and his chief buyer have previously worked in museum and heritage retail, and for this project they have engaged the services of companies who supply some of the country's most respected museum shops. The new gift range will include items such as notebooks and greeting cards, as well as exclusive products inspired by the history of Freemasonry, Freemasons Hall, and the visual language of Art Deco, such as scarves, jewellery, and ties. One major source of inspiration is Bernard Picard's reproduction of John Pine's engraved list of Masonic lodges, which hangs on the wall in the corridor between the museum and the library. This work contains 126 separate images, each representing a lodge that was in existence in 1736. Many feature the signs from the pubs and coffee shops in which the lodges were located. We are doing a whole range of products based on that image, says Bushell. Some will have the whole image, and others will have just a single lodge. As some lodges were based in coffee houses or pubs, we might sell our own coffee or whiskey and gin. Museum shops often source products based on iconic images, and we think Picard's work is our absolute ace. It's a fantastic image, resonant of the historical aspects of Freemasonry. The shop represents the latest step in UGLE's efforts to make Freemasonry and Freemasons Hall more accessible to non-Freemasons, as well as its determination to give members a more enriching experience. It is also hoped the expanded product range will lead to greater profits, providing further benefits for Freemasonry. We are hoping to grow the business significantly, and all our profits will then go into the museum, says Bushell. The new shop will be right opposite the museum, so the two entities will be working very closely together.
Page 17 starts the stories section of the magazine. People, places, history and more. starting with Bigger and Better, why the organ in the Grand Temple is boasting a richer sound, a new sense of community, Freemasonry and the armed forces are linked by shared values, embracing technology, digital workshops help Freemasons highlight the great work they do, putting on a good show, meet Grand Director of Ceremonies Charles Hopkinson Woolley, and Hooked on the Craft, 60 seconds with Ian Chandler, Surrey Provincial Grand Master. So we start with Pipe Dreams. After an extensive restoration, the Grand Temple organ sounds better than ever and is enjoyed by Freemasons and students of the Royal College of Organists alike. When Freemason Charles Grace volunteered to project manage the restoration of the Grand Temple organ in Freemasons Hall back in 2013, little did he know just what kind of commitment he was making. I was a member of the Committee of General Purposes, and we were looking at ways to celebrate the Royal Arch's 200th anniversary, remembers Charles, when somebody said the organ needed seeing to, and the President asked for a volunteer. I put my hand up. I had no idea it was going to take up the most of the next 2 years of my life. The Grand Temple organ was installed by organ builders Henry Willis and Sons in 1933 and was in its day considered an achievement of technical brilliance. The organ's 2,200 pipes were crowded into two very narrow triangular spaces, which tapered from the widest end of the hall next to the balconies down to virtually nothing at the eastern end where the openings into the Grand Temple are located. But more than 80 years of wear and tear had taken their toll. You really should give an organ like ours an in-depth inspection and refresh every 25 years, says Charles. The Willis, as the organ is known, has gone more than three times that long. Organists were coming in and asking themselves, "So, what's not going to work today?" Those eight decades of neglect threatened to damage the tonal accuracy of the organ's pipes, and so the instrument was duly shipped off to Harrison and Harrison Works in Durham for some long-overdue TLC. The company was the perfect partner for the restoration, having worked on the organs at the Royal Festival Hall and Westminster Abbey. The length of an organ's pipes, the longest we have is 16 feet, says Charles, and the material they're made from play a fundamental role in determining their pitch, and it's vital that the correct techniques are used to clean them. The longer wooden pipes, which create the deeper notes, need to be vacuumed and varnished, while the shorter metallic pipes, responsible for the higher notes, had to be soaked and scrubbed in soapy water. The instrument's bellows also needed overhauling, and perhaps surprisingly, Harrison and Harrison replaced the original lambskin concertina with new lambskin. There are all sorts of new materials, says Charles, but apparently nothing compares to lambskin. Fully cleaned and refreshed, the repairs were made possible thanks to funding from the Supreme Grand Chapter's reserves. The organ was finally returned to Great Queen Street. But it wasn't just a case of putting everything back as it was. The two original cases that housed the organ's pipes to the left and right of the main stage have been joined by a third, with pipes made from a tin and lead alloy, in keeping with the original Willis design. Hung on the back wall, the new pipes improve the sound quality for those lucky enough to play the organ and those listening to it. If you think of the Grand Temple, the pipes in the two original cases sort of bellowed at each other across the dais. There was nothing to project the sound down to the west, observes Charles. I was always told that if you were sitting underneath the western balcony and everyone was singing God Save the Queen with great lustiness, you couldn't hear the organ even at its loudest. Today, the newly revived Willis organ fills the Grand Temple with a richer and louder sound, all the better for the organist to lead 1,700 Freemasons in song. The restored organ was inaugurated at the Craft and Royal Arch Investiture meetings in April 2015 and had its so-called debut, the new version, in September 2015 when it was played by Thomas Trotter, Birmingham City organist and organist of St Margaret's Westminster. In line with Freemasonry's commitment to community outreach, Charles and his colleagues approached the Royal College of Organists, the RCO, and offered their students the chance to come and use the organ on an ongoing basis. Unsurprisingly, the college was delighted, and now students and members of the RCO regularly enjoy playing one of the finest organs in London. The Grand Temple organ isn't the only one at Great Queen Street, however. There is a more modern digital instrument, donated in 2017 by the Grand Steward's Lodge to mark the tercentenary celebrations in Temple 10 that students and other organists can use. Organists often struggle to find practice facilities. Churches, of necessity, are kept unmanned and locked most of the time, says regular visitor Morwenna Brett, director of music at St Mary's at Frittenden and author of the Lady Organist blog. The delights of practicing at Temple 10 are several, not just the high-specification digital organ, but the warm and professionally run building it's housed in. The grand Art Deco architecture is, of course, a bonus. The Freemasons also introduced a bursary scheme, giving RCO £6,000 a year to distribute as they think best. This could be, as Charles notes, for pupils who find it difficult or expensive to access an organ, or for tutelage fees. Furthermore, two Freemasons prizes are given annually to the students who score highest overall in the colleague of the RCO exam. We always invite the winners to come to Great Queen Street and we show them around Freemasons Hall, says Charles. And of course, we let them play the Willis.
On page 22, joining forces. These three armed forces lodges match the camaraderie and community of the military with the brotherhood of Freemasonry. Household Brigade Lodge, number 2614. Soon after leaving the Coldstream Guards in December 2010, Matthew Burrows began to realise how difficult it would be to replace the close friendships he'd developed on active service in Afghanistan. Already an active Freemason, he found a solution by joining Household Brigade Lodge number 2614. The lodge, which meets three times a year at Duke Street in London, comprises members from the various regiments of the Household Division, the Life Guards, the Blues and Royals, Grenadier Guards, Coldstream Guards, Scots Guards, Irish Guards and Welsh Guards. The lodge has impressive origins, having been consecrated on the 14th of May, 1896, by Field Marshal His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, later King Edward VII. When we all meet up wearing our Household Brigade blue-red-blue ties, there's so much of the camaraderie that you get from having been an operational soldier, Matthew says. It's not possible to recreate on Civvy Street those close bonds you get from fighting side by side with somebody. To have that extra bond with your fellow Freemasons is unique. We know we can speak freely. The lodge's idiosyncrasy extends to the arms collection plate, which is made from metal taken from the first German airship shot down over the UK in the First World War. Some of the usual pomp and circumstance is dialed down in the understanding that many of these Freemasons have done enough marching and saluting to last a lifetime. The lodge has had many distinguished and royal members, including Edward VII's brother, the Duke of Connaught and Strathern, who was master from 1908 to 1942, the Prince of Wales, later King Edward VIII, and the Duke of York, later King George VI. Military members include Field Marshal Earl Kitchener of Khartoum and Major General Alan Adair, who was General Officer commanding of the Guards Armoured Division in the Second World War. Charitable undertakings focus on military charities, such as the Household Division Charity, which helps with the welfare of serving and retired members of the Household Division and their families. Soldiers can be asked to make many sacrifices, and this is why Freemasonry holds the military with such respect. While Matthew was in Afghanistan, provincial lodges would send buddy packs with gifts and supplies, which meant that Matthew sometimes found himself in a mud hut miles from home, explaining to soldiers in his platoon what Freemasonry involved. One joins Freemasonry for a desire to service the principles of Freemasonry, and these fit in parallel with the principles of the British Army, he says. The values and standards of the Army, loyalty, integrity, cooperation, are intertwined with Freemasonry. Navy Lodge, number 2612. As its number suggests, Navy Lodge was founded around the same time as the Household Brigade Lodge, and its first worshipful master in 1896 was His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, later Edward VII, who consecrated Household Brigade Lodge. Royal connections have been a consistent part of Navy Lodge's history ever since, with several HRHs among former members. There have also been three winners of the Victoria Cross, countless admirals and generals, and explorers Sir Ernest Shackleton and Robert Falcon Scott. His Royal Highness Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, is a current member, one of two who have been members for more than half of the Lodge's history. Secretary Peter Richardson was recently given the task of writing to the Duke to inform him the fees had gone up. He always writes back saying he appreciates being kept informed, Peter says. Peter himself has been in the Royal Navy for nearly 35 years, and his sea service has taken him around the world and as far south as the Falklands. A Freemason since 2010, he finds at Navy Lodge some of the banter familiar to the different branches of the Navy. I am what the Navy calls a weapons engineer, and I can't tell you what the others call us, as it's not politically correct. The relationship between the Navy and Freemasonry goes a bit deeper than this, though. In the Navy, we are seldom individuals, Peter notes. A ship is a complex organization operated by a team. It's the same in a lodge. The current worshipful master, who has been a commanding officer of two submarines, admits that without the team around him, there's no way it could work. Navy Lodge will celebrate its 125th anniversary in 2021. It usually meets five times a year at Freemasons Hall before dinner at a club in Bedford Street. The lodge has a few quirks. Nobody wears gloves, purportedly because a royal member once forgot to bring his, and with regal authority, he immediately declared them surplus to requirement. A midshipman's dirk, a type of dagger, is used as a poignard, and the alms collection is done in a replica of a rum barrel. There are three jewels, a founder's jewel, a member's jewel, and a centenary jewel. And the lodge is one of only five where members are authorized to wear a member's jewel at other meetings. Charitable works have a maritime connection and often benefit youths, and include supporting the sea cadets and purchasing dinghies for a club for disadvantaged children. For us, the experience of Freemasonry is a continuation of what has been a huge and important part of our working life, Peter says. In the service, we move around a lot and meet a lot of people. That shared ability to get on with people and be brotherly continues in the lodge. We have members well into their 80s, and I've no doubt that being an active part of the lodge helps them to maintain their vigour. Royal Air Force Lodge, number 7335. There is a phrase that appears on all Royal Air Force Lodge summonses that was coined by founder Arthur Rees when the lodge was consecrated by the Most Worshipful Grand Master, the Right Honourable the Earl of Scarborough, in 1954. Keep the RAF Lodge human and happy. Let's be disciplined, orderly, doing our best, but not stuffy. According to current Master Matthew Rose, that has remained the guiding principle ever since. Aeroplanes weren't even invented when the Household Brigade and Navy Lodges were consecrated, so the RAF Lodge is by necessity a much younger sibling to the other military lodges. However, its petition was sponsored by Navy Lodge, demonstrating the close relationship between the branches of the armed forces and their equivalents in Freemasonry. The Lodge currently meets four times a year at Freemasons Hall, with meetings featuring an organist who plays a selection of pieces, including the Air Force March and other flying-themed music, which can be great fun, Matthew says. The Lodge has a few other quirks. Members are allowed to attend in military uniform if they desire, and the badge features the RAF crest and a ribbon with RAF colours. There are currently 48 members, the oldest of whom is 99, at a variety of different ranks. It's this mix of ages and ranks that Matthew finds particularly rewarding. Matthew joined the RAF from school in 2003 and flew Boeing C-17s in Iraq and Afghanistan. He has also served overseas and at home on humanitarian missions, and draws a comparison between the RAF and Freemasonry. A lot of people think Freemasonry is about getting something for yourself, a bit like joining a prestigious golf club, but that's not what it's about or why people get into it, he says. People do it because they know it's a force for good. That's much like our armed forces. They are a way to help other people. As with the other military lodges, the members of the RAF lodge have found that Freemasonry has been key to retaining those extraordinarily close bonds forged during service. Military life is definitely different, Matthew says. If I was to leave the Air Force, the thing I would miss most is the fact that your colleagues are also your friends, and you spend a lot of time interacting with them. In that way, military lodges provide the same role as something like the Royal British Legion. They allow older people to keep in touch with what the RAF is doing these days, and let younger people learn more about the heritage of the Air Force.
The next article in the stories section is The Social Network. In its campaign to connect Freemasons at home and overseas, UGLE's communications team has been taking digital workshops on the road. In these uncertain times, effective communication is crucial to safeguard against a whole host of potential problems. It is at times like these that we really come to appreciate the ability to stay in touch with those closest to us. At the United Grand Lodge of England, UGLE, communication is at the forefront of plans to normalise Freemasonry. Even the very existence of social media channels across a number of popular platforms plays a huge role in allowing Freemasons to shout from the rooftops about all the fantastic work being undertaken by members in provinces across the country and in districts overseas. It's not going to happen overnight, and it's a team effort. This was identified some time ago by communications manager Sean Butler with web content manager Dean Simmons, two members of the communications department at UGLE. They realised it was vital that best practice and assistance was given to provinces and districts wherever it was needed. As a result, the UGLE Digital Workshop was born. Lasting anywhere from 90 minutes to 3 hours, depending on the number of questions, the workshop covers content for FMT, websites and social media, three major areas of focus at UGLE. We were fully aware that provinces and districts were doing some fantastic work across all forms of communication, Sean said. We wanted to update them on how we do things at the centre and share some additional best practice tips that they may find useful. Sean and Dean have so far delivered the workshop to 31 provinces. We are enormously impressed by the willingness to embrace digital communications, Dean adds. There is a real determination out there among the membership to not only embrace this technology, but also to do it well. Feedback on the workshop has been universally positive, and several more were scheduled to be held before the COVID-19 outbreak took hold. Paul Maddox, Provincial Communications Officer for North Wales, said, "In North Wales, we found the workshop extremely useful. It was valuable to hear from the team at UGLE about the work they're doing to change the public perception of Freemasonry." Sean and Dean intend to resume the workshop when life returns to normal, adapting and developing it to cater to individual provinces. "We very much see this as an ongoing project that we're committed to," Sean says. "We appreciate that provincial communications teams are made up of volunteers, and we need to be making their lives as easy as possible by lending a hand wherever we can." The UGLE Communications Department is also working on a number of toolkits that will be available for members to download. "We hope that these will be of assistance to members who are interested in developing their lodge's use of digital communications." And if you're interested in booking a workshop, you can email sbutler@ugle.org.uk.
On page 28, Master of Ceremonies. A year into his role, Charles Hopkinson Woolley explains how his military background stood him in good stead for the office of Grand Director of Ceremonies. Charles Hopkinson Woolley admits that the first time he received a phone call from UGLE's then Grand Director of Ceremonies, Oliver Lodge, his first thought was, "What have I done wrong?" The call was a friendly one, though. Oliver asked Charles to become one of his deputies. All the same, Charles was taken by surprise when he got another summons from Oliver several years later. This time, Oliver asked Charles whether he would be interested in becoming his successor. Charles has now been UGLE's Grand Director of Ceremonies since spring 2019. I have no idea how people are chosen, but that is the position I find myself in today, he says. It's a fantastic role, and is often described as the best job in Freemasonry. You are at the heart of all the discussions and arrangements around the ceremonial side of things. Charles became a Freemason in October 1991, joining the lodge for his old school, Stowe. His father was a schoolmaster, and Charles spent his early years living on the Isle of Wight and in Oxford. He received his officer training at the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst, where he was awarded the prestigious Sword of Honour and spent 4 years in the British Army with the 4th and 7th Royal Dragoon Guards, mainly in Germany but including a tour of Cyprus. After leaving the army, he went into the city, where he has remained ever since, initially working for Cazenove, at the time one of the UK's last independent stockbrokers. It's that military experience that Charles feels has been particularly helpful in preparing him for the role of Grand Director of Ceremonies. The army teaches you the importance of reliability and integrity, he says, of being somebody that people can count on. That's important in this role. You can't not be there. You have to turn up, and you have to do a good job. It also helps prepare you to be able to think on your feet when the unexpected happens. Oliver had a military background as well. Oliver had been Grand Director of Ceremonies for 10 years, a longer term than usual, and the demanding and attention-dominating tercentenary celebrations came in the middle of his time in office. Yet even with this considerable experience, Oliver didn't try to tell his successor how to do the job. The advice that everybody gave me was to do it my own way, not to try to copy anybody else, says Charles. Oliver is a hard act to follow because he was absolutely meticulous in his planning and had great authority. When he discussed the role with me, I did say I needed to think about it, but more importantly, I needed to speak to my wife so she would understand the implications. Oliver was very understanding and actually made arrangements for my wife to talk to his wife about what it involved. Charles has always been an active Freemason. He agrees that this is part of his character. When he decides to do something, he does it properly, making as strong a contribution as he can. His membership in Freemasonry reflects this. In Stowe Lodge, number 9002, he started as a steward and then worked his way through the offices, becoming master in 2002 and secretary in 2004. His progression continued when he was appointed Metropolitan Grand Pursuivant, then Assistant Grand Director of Ceremonies, and eventually Deputy Grand Director of Ceremonies, following that initial call from Oliver. I felt I'd already been lucky to have had what I had, so I was absolutely bowled over, he says. As an Assistant Grand Director of Ceremonies, you know the Deputy Grand Directors of Ceremonies and are frankly terrified of them, so being asked to do that role was highly flattering. It was a great chance to contribute something to Freemasonry, which I was getting so much from. His enthusiasm for Freemasonry comes across strongly in conversation. When asked what he most enjoys about it, he doesn't hesitate before answering. Freemasonry lets you meet a lot of interesting people, some of whom are a lot older, have done fascinating things in their lives, and from whom you can learn a lot, he says. The charitable side, the moral side, the volunteering side, these are all fantastic, but the most important thing is the social side and the impact it has on people's lives. When people retire or lose their partner, it's very easy for their social life to contract and for them to lose a sense of meaning in their life. Freemasonry's role in combating that is incredibly valuable, and if it didn't exist, it would have to be invented. The ceremonies that Charles oversees are an essential element of this side of Freemasonry. He draws a lot of satisfaction from putting on an impressive show. You want people to say that it was special, he says. I see them as clients and want them to go away happy. It's all about enjoyment. If Freemasonry isn't enjoyable, people won't turn up. With events on hold during the coronavirus lockdown, Charles is anticipating a busy period when normal life resumes. Next year will bring the first lodge tercentenary celebrations, and there are provincial grandmasters to be installed, along with district grandmasters and grand superintendents. There are always new things to do, he says. Oliver was lucky enough to consecrate a new grand lodge, the Grand Lodge of Monaco. Will something like that happen? I don't know. But periodically a ruler will retire, and a new one will be installed, and I may get the chance to help with that at some point. I just enjoy the role. I'm not a frustrated actor. I quite enjoy the fact that I'm not the centre of attention, but I am the one who puts on the show. That's not to say he doesn't occasionally feel nervous. At the March 2019 quarterly communication, he found himself proclaiming His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent as the newly re-elected Grand Master in front of no fewer than three of his predecessors. As part of the meeting, you proclaim the Grand Master by his several styles and titles, Charles says. That takes about 2 or 3 minutes, and it's the one thing you cannot possibly get wrong. I was doing this with Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes and Deputy Grand Master Jonathan Spence behind me, and Oliver somewhere to my left, and I was very conscious of them all being there. I didn't dare look at anyone, and instead delivered it directly to the balcony. I knew that 99% of people there wouldn't know if I got it wrong, but they certainly would.
Page 32. Hooked on the craft. This 60 Seconds With interview, we meet Ian Chandler, a retired police detective and provincial Grand Master and Grand Superintendent for Surrey. Ian Chandler's introduction to Freemasonry came through a hobby of his, fishing. The owner of my local tackle shop was a friendly chap who I got to know quite well. He and his buddy started talking about their lodge, which sparked my interest, especially in relation to charity. Through them I joined, and I immediately loved the ceremonies and took it as a personal challenge to learn them and have a go at the weekly lodge of instruction. As a Master Mason, I became involved in provincial charity work, which was great fun and really rewarding, and the rest, as they say, is history. Ian is a member of the Board of General Purposes and chairs the Board's Communications and Marketing Working Party and Consolidation and Development Group, Adelphi. He also sits on the Hermes Working Party. Now to the interview.
What do you find most inspiring about being a Freemason?
I'm constantly amazed by the energy and willingness of our members to do good things. It is inspiring to find people from every walk of life, background and culture working together for the benefit of our communities. Of all the great things we do, there is nothing more inspiring than witnessing a new member taking office and performing a ceremony to the best of his ability. I find it uplifting to see a brother on his own personal journey of discovery, not only of the meaning behind our ceremonies, but the knowledge of himself.
Is there a historical Freemason you find fascinating, and why?
William Preston was not the most popular man. Indeed, he caused all sorts of problems with Grand Lodge, and for a while was excluded. He had a passion for Freemasonry and collected a vast array of information about the craft. He developed a series of lectures, which he later reproduced with other material in his book Illustrations of Masonry. At his own expense, he delivered his lectures and engaged others to promulgate them. They became extremely popular and have had a lasting effect on our ceremonies and, of course, the lectures of the three degrees we are familiar with today.
Do you have a hero in life you aspire to?
My hero is my father, who passed away a few years ago at the age of 90. My brother and I looked up to him, and he set a great example for us and those around him. He was not a Freemason, but was a keen Rotarian. He embodied everything we as Freemasons hold dear: kindness, tolerance, respect, and, above all, charity. He worked tirelessly to raise money for all sorts of charities, and was never happier than when he was helping someone. His last voluntary role was taking the drinks trolley around the hospice in Torquay that looked after my mum. Later, he was looked after by the same hospice, which treated him like royalty.
What's your favourite hobby?
Favourite hobby? Fishing. My ashes will be scattered into the River Mole at my favourite fishing spot. As a child, summer holidays were spent in Mevagissey, and my mum, dad, brother and I would go sea fishing every other day. Having caught the bug, my brother and I tried our hands at fishing local ponds, and we remain the best of fishing buddies today. I mostly fish competitions on commercial lakes. My brother, who lives in Devon, has a boat, so I try to visit as often as possible so that we can get out to sea. I also like gardening on my allotment.
Do you have a place you'd love to visit?
I have two current places in the world I'd love to go. First, Treasure Cay in the Bahamas. And more recently, I've rather enjoyed visiting South Africa, in particular the safaris in the Eastern Cape. The wine region is also worth a visit.
What was the most memorable part of your initiation?
Most memorable part of my initiation? Well, I liked it all. But the charge after initiation spoke to me. And it was the first piece of ritual I learnt, mostly because a few months after my initiation, the preceptor, now a great friend, gave me a book about the first degree and told me to have a look at the charge over the summer. I took that to mean I had to learn it. So I did.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received that you'd like to live your life by?
It has to be, do to others as you would wish they will do to you. A daily advancement section, extending knowledge of Freemasonry, begins on page 33. There are three main articles: Famous Freemasons, choosing portraits to feature at the Museum of Freemasonry; Tales from the Archives, Freemasons' records reveal the story of a steward on the Titanic; and Red Cross of Constantine, an order of complexity, enlightenment and spiritual development.
On page 34, Hall of Freemasonry Fame. We've heard of famous figures such as Winston Churchill being a Freemason. But did you know that jazz musician Duke Ellington and entertainer Harry Corbett were too? Museum of Freemasonry assistant curator Andrew Tucker walks us through the Familiar Faces exhibition. Last year, I was given the task of assembling a selection of images to be hung in the corridor leading to the Museum of Freemasonry, a small exhibition called Familiar Faces. Obviously, the question was who to pick. The library had books with lists of Freemasons who might be known to the public, and there were numerous other sources, such as Grand Lodge's own website, so I set to work assembling a list of potential candidates. I decided to avoid royalty and military figures, since both already featured in either the museum's displays or in recent exhibitions. I also limited myself to individuals no longer among us, to avoid complications with licensing the images. It was difficult to choose, as anybody I might consider to be a famous Freemason might be very obscure to one of our visitors. It was important to show a variety of people, crossing boundaries of time, nationality, ethnicity, and gender. The Museum of Freemasonry caters to a very broad audience: Freemasons using the hall, local Londoners, visiting members, and tourists from far and wide. Some are curious and drop in while passing, while others have been planning their visit for months. This exhibition needed to appeal to a diverse and international range of viewers. In the end, I turned to one of the best sources of information on the subject, the museum's staff. They did not disappoint, and soon I had a decent selection, which I then presented back to my contributors, asking them to draw up a shortlist. Compiling their responses and adding my own choices gave me my final list. There were some obvious selections. The French Freemason, the Chevalier d'Eon, born 1728, was a fascinating character, a diplomat, soldier, and spy. Plus, there was endless speculation as to d'Eon's gender, to the point that the London Stock Exchange ran a betting pool on it, so I had to include them. Martin Cherry, our librarian and a keen cricket fan, suggested Kumar Sri Ranjit Singhji, born 1872. More simply known as Ranji. This was someone who I had never heard of, but a bit of research gave me the tale of an Indian prince who, in between struggling to claim the throne of the province of Nawanajar, which he did in 1907, found time to become one of the most famous batsmen in British cricketing history. Another person I didn't know about before, but probably should have, was Josephine Baker, born 1906. An American exotic dancer who moved to France, became a member of the French resistance during World War II, and later a leading contributor to the American civil rights movement. She was initiated into a lodge of La Grande Loge Féminine de France, the French rite of adoption permitting women to become Freemasons. I couldn't not include Harry Corbett, born 1918, and Sooty. This was a figure from my early childhood, a former electrician who became a popular television personality in the 1950s and 60s, passing the puppet to his son Peter when he retired. While deafness in one ear thwarted his musical ambitions, he did become an organist for his lodge, Chevin Lodge No. 6848, in Yorkshire, West Riding. There were others, of course. Historical figures such as satirist and cartoonist William Hogarth, Scottish author Sir Walter Scott, and the father of immunology, Edward Jenner, whose inclusion now seems rather appropriate. Car manufacturer Henry Ford is a name most people would know, as is that of polar explorer Robert Falcon Scott. There are also some names from more modern times, such as jazz musician Duke Ellington and actors Ernest Borgnine and Peter Sellers. This exhibition, I hope, features an interesting cross-section of people from many different walks of life. Some will be known to many, and others perhaps less well-known. Some were names I knew, even if I didn't know that they were Freemasons, and others had stories that were well worth telling. This current set of 12 images will be on display until the end of February 2021, but we are planning to carry on with another dozen. Oscar Wilde, Harry Houdini, Richard Pryor, and Robert Burns will make an appearance. There will be others, but you will have to wait to get a look at some different, but still familiar, faces. Familiar Faces is on display at the Museum of Freemasonry through to the 31st of December 2021. While the museum is closed to help fight the coronavirus, we will be sharing the portraits from the exhibition on our website, museumfreemasonry.org.uk, and on our social media channels.
Page 36, and this article's called Life Stories. In researching the Treasures exhibition, assistant archivist Louise Pichel found records that throw a poignant light on the Museum of Freemasonry's archives. Who hasn't heard of the Titanic? The story of the ship that struck an iceberg and sank on her maiden voyage is so well known that it was made into a Hollywood blockbuster. So imagine my surprise when I discovered a link to this piece of history buried in the museum's archives. I was looking for items for our Treasures exhibition, a chance to show off elements of our collections that people don't usually get to see, and stumbled across the words Titanic case written in red across some of our records. I was looking at items relating to the Royal Masonic School for Girls. This was a school set up by Freemasons in 1788 to support the daughters of members who had hit hard times. Often, fathers had died, leaving mothers without a means of supporting their children. To apply for a place at the school, an application, known as a petition, was completed. Our archives include petitions going back to 1789, and they are, quite possibly, my favourite part of the collection. The records of the school are mostly made up of minute books, admissions records, and petition paperwork. The forms giving rather dry details of finances, along with the copies of birth, marriage and death certificates, and medical officers' reports, only tell half the story. Among the impersonal facts and figures are letters written by friends of the families, doctors' notes, and even samples of children's handwriting. As well as giving details of a father's Freemasonry, these records are a window into the human stories behind the paperwork. The case of seven-year-old twins Eleanor and Florence Hill is particularly poignant. Their father, Henry, was a Freemason, initiated in Staines Lodge in Middlesex in March 1904. He had originally worked as a jeweller. The girls' petitions for admission include a letter from the family doctor, Charles Batchelor, concerning Henry's health. He had been suffering from tubercular disease of the lungs and had given up his business and moved to Brighton in the hopes of improving things. Dr. Batchelor's letter goes on to say that Henry had also been advised to take a voyage for his health. Unable to afford a ticket for a voyage, and in a tragic twist of fate, Henry instead took a job on the White Star Line. By that point, he had moved to Southampton, working as a steward on the Olympic, before boarding the Titanic on the 4th of April, 1912. The letter rather blandly ends with the statement that Henry was in that capacity, as a steward, when he was lost with the Titanic. Without her husband's income, his widow, Florence, was unable to support her daughters. Finding herself in need, she had to call on the Freemasons for help. Stories like this are the reason I became an archivist. There is something about handwritten pages that transports you into the lives of the people who wrote them. When looking at the school records in particular, I find myself wondering what happened to the families who needed help. What were their lives like? From these records, we get a glimpse of Henry's life before the Titanic and the unfortunate circumstances that led to him being on the ship on that fateful day. These pieces of paper in the museum's archives make him and his family all the more real. To me, that's what makes them a true treasure. Our library and archives are full of these human stories waiting to be discovered. Unearth your own treasures by visiting our website, or come to see us later in the year when yet more hidden gems will be on display.
On page 40, Faith, Unity and Zeal. Dan Heath takes a look at the Red Cross of Constantine, perhaps the least known of what the immediate past Grand Sovereign once called the three great pillars of Christian Freemasonry. The Masonic and Military Order of the Red Cross of Constantine and the Orders of the Holy Sepulchre and of St. John the Evangelist has a long and distinguished history. The eminent and prolific Masonic luminary, Robert Wentworth Little, writing as Grand Recorder in 1868, claims that its origins go back as far as the 1780s, and there are records to support the working of a variety of orders containing the name Red Cross, dating from 1770. In addition to Little, other names now well known to Masonic historians appear in the order's history. Charles Shiroff, the ubiquitous Thomas Dunkerley, and Waller Rodwell Wright all make an appearance and are worthy of further exploration in their own right. For the purposes of this article, we shall focus on the relatively modern structure of the order, dating from circa 1865. That said, as with many Masonic orders, it has experienced several redevelopments in the intervening years. The order, one of the Christian chivalric orders of Freemasonry, consists of three degrees: Knight of the Red Cross of Constantine, supplemented by two appendant orders, Knight of the Holy Sepulchre and Knight of St. John the Evangelist, Eminent Viceroy, and Most Puissant Sovereign. The story of the Knight of the Red Cross of Constantine commences in a conclave, where the candidate is installed as a Knight Companion of the Order of the Red Cross of Constantine. It is based on the legend of Roman Emperor Constantine the Great's conversion to Christianity, when Constantine and his army were preparing for what we now know as the Battle of Milvian Bridge, Northern Rome, Italy, 312 AD, against his rival, Maxentius. One evening, as he and his army were marching towards Rome, Constantine, meditating on the future battle, prayed that he would be granted inspiration and wisdom. At that moment, as the sun was setting, there appeared in the heavens a pillar of light in the shape of the cross with an inscription thereon. Constantine commanded a standard be made bearing the image of the cross, which would lead his army into battle. Outnumbered roughly 2-1, Constantine's army fought valiantly and defeated Maxentius in a decisive victory that saw Maxentius killed in battle. Constantine was duly proclaimed Augustus Maximus, Senior Augustus. This provides the foundation for the ceremony and offers an opportunity for the conclave orator to deliver an interesting lecture described as the Legend of the Foundation of the Order. Having taken this ceremony, the Knight Companion is invited to attend a meeting when the appendant orders will be conferred. This is usually done by a specialist team, either at a regular meeting or at a meeting convened by the division, province. The appendant orders consist of two ceremonies, Knight of the Holy Sepulchre and Knight of St. John the Evangelist, conferred at the same meeting, beginning in a commandery and ending in a sanctuary. The ceremony of Knight of the Holy Sepulchre has its origins in the search by Constantine's mother, Helena, later Saint Helena, for the true cross at Golgotha and the subsequent construction of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, consecrated in 335 AD. The Masonic narrative is founded on the story of a select and devoted band of knights who commit themselves to guarding the holy place and relates to the circumstances of Christ's crucifixion and resurrection. The ceremony of Knight of St. John the Evangelist is based on the failed attempt by Emperor Julian the Apostate to rebuild the temple at Jerusalem in 360 AD and includes a remarkable discovery made among the ruins. As the candidate progresses through the ceremony, he gains enlightenment as to the Christian aspects of the craft and royal arch ceremonies. The degree of the Red Cross of Constantine and the appendant orders are recognized as being interrelated but independent of each other and have two very distinct certificates with a great deal of detail and imagery on each. These preparatory ceremonies must be completed before attaining the offices of viceroy and then sovereign of the conclave, separate degrees conferred at the installation meeting. In a college of priests mason, the viceroy elect is consecrated as Venerable Eusebius, an honor relating to Eusebius of Caesarea, circa 260 AD to 339 AD, regarded as the father of church history. The viceroy is effectively the second in command in the conclave, and should serve the office for at least 1 year before progressing to the chair. This is achieved by being presented as sovereign-elect in a senate of princes mason and enthroned as most puissant sovereign. Thus, the Order of the Red Cross of Constantine may be seen as a Masonic rite of complexity, enlightenment, and spiritual development. Its ceremonies can be challenging, both to deliver and to understand, but they contain what has been described as being some of the most beautiful and thought-provoking ritual to be found anywhere within the body of Freemasonry. From a Masonic point of view, they provide us with lessons of faith, unity, and zeal, the watchwords of the order, while historically they commemorate Constantine the Great, Emperor of York 306 AD, whose actions had an impact on European Christianity, still with us today.
Also on this page is a fact file about the order, starting with who is in charge. Well, it's the most illustrious Grand Sovereign Graham Leslie Flight, Knight Grand Cross of Constantine, GCC, who is the most illustrious Knight Patriarch and Grand Commander of the Appendant Orders. He is assisted by the Right Illustrious and Eminent Deputy Grand Sovereign Peter Hawken, MBE, GCC, and the Right Illustrious and Venerable Grand Eusebius, the Reverend Timothy John Nicholas Lestrange, GCC, who is also the Right Illustrious and Venerable Sub-Patriarch and Deputy Grand Commander of the Appendant Orders. Provinces are known as divisions and are ruled over by the Right Illustrious Intendant General and his deputy. Who can join? The order is open to Master Masons who are also companions of the Royal Arch and are able to sign a declaration stating that they are Christians who hold and profess a belief in the Christian Trinitarian faith. How big is the order? There are currently 294 conclaves in the order across 31 divisions and one inspectorate, plus 15 unattached conclaves. They stretch from Hong Kong, Singapore and Malaysia through India and South Africa up into Western Europe and then across to Brazil, Barbados and Jamaica. There are also several sovereign grand conclaves in other parts of the world. This next section is the Grand Lodge section, news from Great Queen Street. And the two articles this time are Art and Astronomy, Phases Bridges Centuries of Tradition with Contemporary Art, and Quarterly Communication on Patience and Perseverance During Testing Times. So we start with History Brought to Light. Museum of Freemasonry Marketing and Communications Manager Barry Hughes throws light on Phases, an exhibition that brings together contemporary art and astronomy-inspired objects. Astronomical symbols around the Museum of Freemasonry are not unusual to see. Indeed, Freemasons Hall has its starry sky in the Grand Temple, and in our galleries, just about every apron and homeware item displays a similar alignment of a sun, a moon, and seven stars. What do all these astronomical references mean? We are all familiar with the night sky, so it's a good reference to help understand Freemasonry's symbolism. In the Grand Temple, those stars on the ceiling also tell a story. In centuries past, when stonemasons worked on cathedrals and castles, the wood-framed roof was always the last to be added to the structure. So those masons were used to gathering beneath the stars. The Grand Temple ceiling is decorated by that same starry sky, and Freemasons, therefore, can realise their place within their history and the cosmos. The stars have another interesting story that ties in with the museum's latest exhibition, phases. Usually found surrounding a crescent moon, there are seven stars representing the seven literal arts and sciences: grammar, logic, rhetoric, geometry, arithmetic, music, and astronomy. In 2019, we asked the art collective Lumen to produce an exhibition inspired by our collection for the museum's South Gallery. Louise Beer, Melanie King, and Rebecca Huxley run Lumen's studio and gallery in the church crypt of St. John on Bethnal Green, and their work focuses on themes of astronomy and light. At the museum, we all thought they'd be well placed to interpret Freemasonry's craft in an exhibition that bridges centuries of tradition with contemporary art practice. Launched in February of this year, Phases included four themed display cases, along with a light-based installation. Selected by Lumen, each of the display cases held items from our collections representing the heavens, time, elements, and symbols. Some of these items are never or rarely seen in public, so it was a real pleasure to exhibit them. Lumen said of the experience, "When curating the exhibition cases, we wanted to elaborate on these connections of the skies above to Freemasonry. We did this by curating objects from the collection that use, reference, or interact with light in different ways. We hope that these objects will help visitors to understand their own connection with the sun and moon over time." With the cases forming a square in the space, suspended above the central area is a disc covered in reflective fabric. On this disc, images of lunar phases are projected. There are seven phases in all, with each mirroring the actual moon's phase in real time. This adds a touch of mystery and temporal significance to the whole place. Another element not entirely obvious at first glance are the projected images themselves. Not all the moons are familiar to us, as some are beyond our planet's sphere of influence. Lumen explains, "For phases, we wanted to show the phases of the moon at the corresponding times of the month to prompt viewers to actually look up to the sky when they leave the exhibition. Many of our previous installations and commissions correspond to celestial events happening around the time that the artworks are showing." Given this relationship to the outside world and all the hard work that went into making phases, it was with a heavy heart that we had to take the decision to close the museum to the public. It seems quite unfair that the exhibition had only been open for a month, so we have since tried to find new ways to bring it to you. Online culture has never been so important, and we're using our website and social media channels to find a creative workaround to better cope with our newfound confinement. Rest assured, the Museum of Freemasonry is using this time wisely to focus our efforts on not letting a moment as wonderful as phases slip by.
On page 46, in the face of adversity. In a message dated 19th of March 2020, Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes discusses how the bonds of Freemasonry have never been stronger in these unprecedented times. "These are difficult and testing times for us all. First, I wanted to thank each and every one of you for your patience and understanding during this challenging and worrying period. Coronavirus is going to be with us for some considerable time, and I am certain you are as disappointed as I am that we have, reluctantly, suspended all Masonic activity. I trust that you will agree that it was the right course of action at the right time. I appreciate the enormous disruption that this will cause all of us, and also the hole left in our lives by the withdrawal of something we hold enormously dear. To those of you who have been Freemasons for but a few months, this may seem a little strange, but to those like me, who have been bitten by the bug, we cannot help but feel bewilderment and sadness at how quickly something so important has been taken away from us, albeit temporarily. For the next few months, we may not see as much of each other as we have recently. We may be spread throughout the country, or indeed the world, and we may have things asked of us that sit outside the ordinary compass of our experience. From a personal point of view, being over 70 and diabetic, I am taking the lockdown seriously, as I am sure all brethren in the same situation will. There are, of course, a great many in this position, and it is not easy with no end date in sight. My real sympathies are with those who live alone. I am lucky. I have a wife, as well as our children, all of whom are most supportive. Our daughter is arranging our shopping needs where they can't be delivered. I do hope that many of our brethren are in the same boat, and, over and above that, we all have our large and active community of Freemasons to rely on. We are luckier than most. My youngest son is adamant that the best way forward is to try to have some form of structure in our day, as that is what we have been used to most of our lives, albeit in a very different format. I suspect that, in the current times, the structure will take on a rather strange appearance. We live in a reasonably isolated area and can walk for over an hour without seeing anyone. Therefore, I think the dog is going to get a great deal fitter, and could even become a better ritualist. My office might become and stay tidy, and I can catch up with all those things I have been putting off for far too long. This won't take up 3 months or whatever time is required, but I am sure other activities will develop as time goes by. Anything to keep mind and body active. Of course, at some point in the future, life will return to normal. I have already mentioned trying to keep structure in our lives. Freemasonry is a very well-structured institution. That structure has been disturbed, but rest assured that, while the Book of Constitutions is pretty rigid on some subjects, ways will be found to ensure that we get lodges and chapters back onto the right format as quickly as possible after the resumption. This difficult period will run its course and move into history, and our lodges and chapters will begin to meet again. Candidates will experience the wonder of the initiation ceremony. Treasurers will again chase their profligate brethren for dues. Grand officers will, more's the pity, sit tutting in the back rows over some ceremonial slight, imagined or actual, and the rhythm of our Masonic lives will once again return to normal. Over the last few years, we have been trying to stress that Freemasonry must remain relevant to society, and I have never been in doubt that this has been the case in many ways. However, it has never been more relevant than it is right now. What we do in the next few months will be written into our lodge and chapter histories. It will test us as an organization and as people, perhaps more than anything in our lifetimes. I think it is fair to say that I cannot remember a more testing time for the organization, for society, and for the country. We need to step up and do our part, as we have in difficult times past, to help our less fortunate brethren, their families, and the communities from which we are drawn. That is why we have released a joint statement with the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the Freemasons Charity, committing to help those in need. Up and down the country, in provinces large and small, Freemasons are coming together to commit to help those who find themselves at life's lowest ebb. I encourage those of you who feel able to safely give both time and effort to think on how you might play a very small part in this worthy national effort. There are many great ideas already out there, and we will be sharing these and how successful they are as things develop. We will need your dedication, flexibility, and patience over the coming weeks and months to help each other through these turbulent times. Freemasonry has weathered many storms in its centuries-long history. It will weather this one too, and we will emerge ready for the challenges of, I suspect, a very different world. Look after yourselves, brethren. I trust we can get back to normality in the not too distant future. I wish you and your families good health and happiness, and more than your fair share of luck.
Also on this page, we will meet again. The Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, conveys his best wishes to brethren during the crisis. The Grand Secretary has received the following message from the Private Secretary to the Royal... The Grand Secretary has received the following message from the Private Secretary to His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent. The Duke of Kent has asked me to convey to you, your colleagues at the United Grand Lodge of England, all provinces, lodges and brethren, his best wishes during this extraordinarily challenging crisis. His Royal Highness is acutely aware of the burden this is placing on all Freemasons and their families, and that, despite these difficulties, the core values of Freemasonry are being expressed by so many giving help and support in their local communities. The Duke remains keen to hear your news, but, more importantly, looks forward to meeting you again once the crisis has eased. Now we come to the book reviews for this edition, and there are four, as usual. Manual of Freemasonry by Richard Carlyle, The Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry by David L. Gray, 365 Level Steps, Masonic Meditations for Every Day of the Year by John T. Marks, and The City of York, A Masonic Guide by David Harrison.
The first book review is for The Manual of Freemasonry by Richard Carlyle, and the review is by Lionel Brough. A rather famous exposé, used by early Freemasons, now back in print. Exposés on Freemasonry have been published for almost as long as organized Freemasonry itself has existed, appearing since the 1720s. One of the more well-known later ones is the Manual of Freemasonry by Richard Carlyle, which has regularly been reprinted since it first came out in the 19th century. Carlyle, 1790 to 1843, was born to poor parents in Devon. His busy and rather complicated life involved him in all sorts of feisty radicalism, but his main activity was publishing. Indeed, he published his own paper, The Republican, which often got him into trouble with the authorities. After being convicted for blasphemy and sedition, Carlyle ended up in Dorchester prison for 5 years, and was fined the then punishingly huge sum of £1,500, which he could not possibly pay. While there, in some comfort, it must be said, he had two servants, among other things, he still wrote and oversaw his publishing. His wife, Jane, and sister, Mary, continued to print The Republican at his often raided Fleet Street premises until they too were sent off to prison. In 1831, he published the Manual of Freemasonry, a fairly comprehensive exposé of a number of different degrees. Because there were no official ritual books in those days, his became widely bought by Freemasons themselves, and it was often reprinted. Interestingly, for some of the degrees beyond the craft, Carlyle's book is the very earliest evidence we have of their ceremonies. Irritatingly, however, this latest edition has no introduction, index, bibliography, or footnotes, but its publication does at least mean this famous exposé is readily available once again. Anyone with any interest in the history of Freemasonry's ritual should find this a worthwhile purchase.
And the book, Manual of Freemasonry, is published by Masonica, 277 pages, £15.89. Now we come to The Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry by David L. Gray. Another Point of View, initially promising but could have been better, reviewed by Robert Jaggs Fowler. Subtitled A Theological and Historical Treatment on the Catholic Church's Prohibition Against Freemasonry and Its Appendant Masonic Bodies, this book initially promises an academic treatise of potential interest to a wide audience. The first two chapters describe the structure of Freemasonry. The third outlines the author's errant reasons for considering Freemasonry a religion and why its rituals operate as sacraments. 9 chapters reproduce verbatim the translated text of various papal encyclicals and bulls from the year 1738 to modern times. To each document is added a short commentary by the author. The book ends with 2 appendices, the first a reproduction of Anderson's Constitutions of 1723, and the second a significant tranche of Masonic ritual from 1730. Unfortunately, this read quickly disappoints, revealing itself to be in part a reprint of historic documents, and for the rest a thinly veiled polemic against Freemasonry. Aside from what is in the papal documents, there's little theological debate. Moreover, although the author's claimed role is to act as a commentator, unquote, there is no attempt to provide objectivity or balance. With a background as a Freemason and a Catholic, Gray claims Freemasonry to be a danger to every soul before mounting a paranoid defence of the Catholic Church from persecution and intolerance from a collective of Protestantism, communism, homosexualism, the sexual revolution, the Carbonari and the Illuminati, in addition to Freemasonry. Without an index, the book has limited interest to academics. Its reliance on papal documents does not lend itself to the casual reader, nor is it likely to appeal to Freemasons interested in an alternative viewpoint. A pity. And the book, The Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry, published by St. Dominic's Media, 297 pages, price £11.38.
The third book review is for 365 Level Steps, Masonic Meditations for Every Day of the Year by John T. Marks, and the review is by Richard Jaffa. Just Right for the Pocket, Handy Thoughts for Thoughtful Freemasons. I suspect that the exhortation we receive on initiation to make a daily advancement in Masonic knowledge rarely gets the attention it deserves, unless we are under pressure to learn some new ritual or to deliver a lecture. If you want to salve your conscience or fill that gap in your day, then this small pocket-sized book may be the ideal choice. It is hardly bigger than the average ritual book, but its 365 pages contain a similar number of short, well-chosen passages from a range of sources. Many are from the scriptures or ritual, but there are also poems from Juvenal, Bacon, and Milton. None would take more than 3 or 4 minutes a day to read, but the knowledge gained and the cumulative benefit over a year would be substantial. This volume amalgamates, with revisions, 4 earlier volumes that deal with craft Freemasonry and the Royal Arch. Both degrees are included here, which enhances the effect, even if you are not a member of the Royal Arch. Each page consists of a 3 or 4 line quotation, followed by a concise gloss or interpretation of the initial words. It might also be useful for lodges that want a brief meditation or 2-minute talk at the start or end of a meeting. For many of us who are busy and short of time, this book may provide a solution.
And the book, 365 Level Steps, is self-published, 365 pages, £14.50. And the last book in our series this time, The City of York, A Masonic Guide by David Harrison. The article's entitled Richly Rewarding History, A Fine Guide to a Fascinating City. It's reviewed by Julian Perry. As well as being a wonderful city in its own right, York is drenched in association with Freemasonry going back to 1600. The medieval Mason's Loft in York Minster and the Masonic Hall at Duncombe Place are just 2 of the many rewarding places to explore. Duncombe Place is also the home of rare documents relating to the Grand Lodge of York. This organisation started out as early as 1705 and continued to exist, with the odd break here and there, for much of the 18th century. At one point, our own Lodge of Antiquity No. 2, one of the original 4 lodges that set up the Grand Lodge of England at the Goose and Gridiron pub in London, broke away and joined forces with the York set-up, which renamed itself the Grand Lodge of All England, south of the River Trent. Soon after, however, the Lodge of Antiquity was reeled back into the fold, and the York Grand Lodge packed up forever. David Harrison's excellent book does justice to all of this and more. It's well written and splendidly illustrated, with many of the images having never been published before. Although originally published in 2016, it's now available for just £2 and is a really excellent guide to York's rich Masonic history. Even if you have no intention of ever visiting York, this is still a very good addition to one's library. And the book, The City of York, A Masonic Guide, published by Lewis Masonic, is 80 pages and, as it says in the article, priced £2.
On page 57, support through times of crisis. The MCF is prepared to help those who have been hit by unexpected distress. COVID-19 has wreaked havoc on the lives of millions of people, and the ensuing lockdown has touched every industry, causing widespread economic uncertainty. Having only recently reached its lowest point since the financial crash of 2008, unemployment in the UK is once again on the rise. Not only are people being made redundant, but thousands more are simply unable to continue working while so many businesses are out of action. These sudden reductions in income, combined with the costs of increased consumption of water, electricity, gas, and food while at home, have left many households struggling to make ends meet. Through these uncertain times, the MCF remains a source of comfort and security to Freemasons and their families. Having adapted quickly to home working, the MCF is ready to answer your questions, consider applications, and award grants. By providing financial support as quickly as possible through funding provided by Freemasons, the MCF is working to help people maintain stability at home and reduce the burden of anxiety. Christopher's story. When Christopher was made redundant during the last financial crisis, he was unable to find new full-time employment for 2 years, resulting in a considerable amount of debt. At first, asking for help wasn't easy, as Christopher felt that he should be able to provide for his family. He explains, "When things started to get hard for us financially, my wife wanted to seek help, but I was stubborn. Then things became even harder, and that's when I picked up the phone." As well as helping Christopher and his wife, Marina, to cover their bills and other essential living costs, the MCF also provided grants to support their children's education, including swimming and gymnastics lessons. "Throughout the whole process, they made us feel that we shouldn't worry, because it's their job to help," Christopher says. "To any other family in a similar situation, I would say, don't be ashamed. The help is there for a reason, and no one is going to judge you for taking it."
Page 58 has an article entitled "Looking After Your Mental Health." The extraordinary measures announced in response to the coronavirus pandemic have created new worries and stresses, but help is available to those who need it. In March, government restrictions brought vast and sweeping changes to the way we live our lives, changes that have had a major impact on the nation's mental health. The coronavirus lockdown has affected every single person across the UK, and people who would normally consider themselves to have positive mental health now find themselves struggling to cope. Whether it's due to worries about job security, fear of infection, or simply the effect of social isolation, many more people are now reporting feelings of anxiety, stress, depression, and loneliness. A YouGov survey from earlier this year, which was commissioned by the Mental Health Foundation, found that more than 62% of participants felt anxious or worried about the coronavirus, an experience that is no doubt echoed around the country. Easy access to mental health support is needed now more than ever, and the MCF has a counselling service that's ready to help. So, what is the counselling service? It is a free and confidential support service for Freemasons and their family members who are experiencing low mood, symptoms of depression, anxiety, stress, and other conditions affecting their mental well-being. The service is run by an independent team of professional counsellors and therapists who are registered and accredited by the UK Council for Psychotherapy or the British Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy. The counselling service is available to eligible Freemasons and their family members. Children and grandchildren seeking to use the service must be aged 17 to 25 and in full-time education. How do I access it? Well, to get support, all you have to do is to contact the MCF Inquiries team and ask to access the counselling service. You won't be asked about what you want to discuss. The team will simply confirm your connection to Freemasonry and provide you with a telephone number to call. Normally, you would be offered a choice between face-to-face or telephone counselling sessions. However, for the time being, the service will operate exclusively over the phone. To access the MCF's counselling service, contact the inquiries team today by emailing help@mcf.org.uk or calling 0800 035 6090.
On page 59, Feeding the Community. Freemasons provide 120,000 people with donations of 300,000 meals and 38 tons of food during the COVID-19 pandemic. With many families struggling to put food on the table, Freemasons across England and Wales are working on hundreds of initiatives to help minimise the daily pressure on households across the UK. The United Grand Lodge of England, in partnership with the MCF, formed the COVID-19 Response Group to support those in need. The group galvanised its network to provide food donations, deliveries and fresh meals, and opened lodges' kitchens to cook them. Freemasons have been rolling up their sleeves and helping nationwide. In Bristol, 14 volunteer Freemasons are packing and labelling food parcels for those suffering food poverty, while in Bedfordshire, 11 tonnes of food were provided in May alone. Elsewhere, food banks in North Cumbria, Windermere, Penrith and South Lakes are being supported with a £24,000 donation from Cumberland and Westmorland Freemasons. Worcestershire Freemasons donated food and refreshment to NHS staff at the local Alexandra Hospital. In Warwickshire, Freemasons have donated £18,000 to the Fairshare and Warwickshire food banks, and in Wiltshire, they are delivering to more than 30 homes. Middlesex saw donations of £41,000 and 2,500 meals per week. In Norfolk, Somerset, South Wales, Berkshire, Cambridgeshire, Dorset, Durham, Hampshire and Isle of Wight, Staffordshire, East Lancashire, Leicestershire and Rutland, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire, Cornwall, Monmouthshire, Somerset, Lincolnshire, Herefordshire, Jersey and Sussex, Freemasons are preparing meals and packages of food to be distributed to residents. Sussex Freemasons have donated £28,000 to 14 food banks. Freemason Ezra McGowan, who had the coronavirus, has been delivering food to those in isolation in West Lancashire. David Matthews and his son Bailey were looking for a place with a kitchen to cook Sunday lunches for more than 100 people. Freemason David Purdy supplied catering equipment and the Devonshire province agreed to loan its facilities. Mr. Matthews said, "I tried many places, but the Freemasons were the only organisation to reply. I couldn't do it if it wasn't for their support. I now realise what a wonderful organisation it is and that its ethos is the same as mine. When this current situation is over and lodges open again, I'll definitely be applying to join." In London, Freemasons have helped 40,000 people with 55,000 meals, while in Shropshire they have donated £47,000 to help the community and to buy a van for the Shrewsbury Food Hub. Buckinghamshire Freemasons are providing 350 meals per week to Aylesbury Women's Aid Refuge. In Somerset, local Freemasons have donated more than 20,000 meals. North Wales Freemasons are cooking around 700 meals every Sunday. Local resident Pete Williams said, "Many thanks to the Freemasons for including my 95-year-old grandmother in this very generous endeavour and delivering to her door. She was truly grateful." In East and West Kent, Freemasons donated £65,000. The Family Food Bank and many others are now able to supply in excess of 80,000 meals. Each week in Yorkshire, Freemasons are preparing and delivering 80 meals to the late shift emergency services at Dewsbury's Hospital. Since March, Derbyshire Freemasons have provided more than 1,000 meals at Masonic Centre kitchens. Nottinghamshire Freemasons are helping 1,000 families each week. Frozen meals are being distributed in Surrey to families in need. Sarah Abellan from Nutfield Parish Council said, "Thank you for your generosity in providing frozen meals, which are delivered to people in need. It has made a huge difference." Northumberland Freemasons cooked 800 meals to run Meals on Wheels and delivered food to the emergency services, self-isolating people and care homes. Dr. David Staples, the chief executive of the United Grand Lodge of England, said, "No one in this day and age should have to worry where their next meal is coming from. Food banks across the UK being used more than ever before the crisis has put untold pressure on this vital network. We are so glad that we are able to provide thousands of families across the UK with a hot meal or food donations to get them through this current crisis. Freemasons have achieved all of this in just a few months and have also given their time to produce and deliver food to the vulnerable. We will continue to raise money and donate our time until we are able to return to normality. Freemasons stand behind our core values of friendship, integrity, charity and respect, and are proud to help so many in their time of need."
Page 60, and Freemasons give the gift of family connections in a time of isolation. Hundreds of tablets are being donated by Freemasons across England and Wales to help families stay in touch with their loved ones during the coronavirus crisis. The devices will be provided to more than 50 hospitals, care homes and hospices across the regions at the start of a new nationwide initiative. During the current crisis, NHS hospitals have been forced to limit visits to patients in an attempt to control infections. Some of those suffering from the virus can be in intensive care for 2 to 3 weeks or more, with one-to-one visits only being allowed for dying patients. This has led hospitals to try to find a way to help patients communicate with their families during this difficult time. Freemasons have risen to the challenge and gifted around 1,000 tablets to help patients see and hear their loved ones and provide much-needed comfort. The donations were coordinated through the new COVID-19 response group, which was formed by the United Grand Lodge of England, UGLE, as an emergency structure in the wake of the pandemic. Its purpose is to work together to deliver life-changing initiatives on a national scale to those in need. Using the full capability of the network, Freemasons have been able to draw together suppliers to source the devices quickly and efficiently. Dr. David Staples, CEO of the United Grand Lodge of England, said, "At this time of national crisis, we will work together within our local communities to provide charity and support to those in need, as we have done for the last 300 years. To ensure what we do is both effective and targeted, we have, for the first time in our history, coordinated our activity on a national level through the newly formed COVID-19 response group. Our 200,000 members have united to make a significant difference to the lives of people in these very stressful circumstances." In London, hospitals, including the Royal London, Queen Mary's and St Thomas, will receive approximately 115 tablets. In Kent, Surrey and Sussex, some 200 tablets will be donated. Additionally, Queen Elizabeth Hospital Birmingham, Royal Gwent Hospital and additional NHS hospitals in Worcestershire will receive 180 tablets between them. Hospitals in Durham, Yorkshire and Northumberland will receive 170 tablets, while in Somerset, hospitals including the Royal United Hospital Bath and Western General Hospital will be sent 40. Freemasons are also giving 25 units to care homes in Berkshire. West Middlesex Hospital will receive 8 tablets, and Hillingdon Hospital in Middlesex has been earmarked for a further 7. Freemasons also donated 100 devices in South Wales. In Devonshire, Cadogan Court, Exeter will receive 5 tablets. In addition, Freemasons are donating 30 tablets to hospitals, care homes and hospices in Buckinghamshire. The Royal Infirmary in Bristol will receive 5 tablets. In North Wales, lodges provided 50 tablets to help local hospitals. Nia Williams, support manager at NHS charity Awyr Las, said, "We're extremely grateful to the Freemasonry community for the amazing support they already give to our A&E and MIU departments across North Wales. This generous donation will help by using technology which will enable patients to have face-to-face communications with their loved ones using tablet PCs." Hospitals in Norfolk will receive 12 tablets and 15 will be sent to Suffolk. In East Lancashire, Freemasons are donating 10 smartphones and 2 tablets to help the NHS, while in Monmouthshire, 11 tablets have been donated to hospitals. All of the donated devices will continue to be used by the hospitals after the coronavirus is over.
RMBI Care Company residents stay connected. In March, RMBI Care Company made the difficult decision to restrict visitors in its care homes to ensure the health and safety of residents and staff during the coronavirus pandemic. To help care home residents stay connected with their families and friends, the homes have set up video calling to enable them to keep in touch with loved ones. Irene Owen, a resident at Devonshire Court in Leicester, said, "I've never seen anything like it. It's much better than a phone call, as you feel as if you could get up and hug them." Vicky Gutteridge, Business Relationship Manager at Devonshire Court, said, "It means so much for our residents and their relatives to be able to connect face to face in these tough times. We are doing everything we can to protect our residents, keep up their morale and support their well-being." The care homes are also encouraging people to write letters or send greeting cards to residents. For more information about RMBI Care Company homes, please visit rmbi.org.uk.
And that completes this reading through of issue 50 of FMT magazine, Freemasonry Today, published by UGLE, the United Grand Lodge of England. Issue 50 for summer 2020. Thank you for listening.